This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
It's my music.
You're listening to Music of the Mat on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling. It's all part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich, and joining me today is someone making their second appearance on the podcast. You heard him on the Jeff Jarrett episode last summer, and now he's back for more fun and frolic. It's Garrett Kidney. Garrett, welcome back.
Sup?
Is that it? Just sup?
I'm trying to be all, like, cool and, like, mysterious, you know, just sit back deep in my chair. I actually went through the effort of sitting back deep in the chair, crossing my arms, and then saying sup. So there was a whole gesture to it. There's a theatricality to my sup.
Okay, now are you wearing sunglasses and a backwards baseball cap?
Because
that would up the cool factor exponentially.
I miss, like, early 2000s cool. Because now we're all, like, cool, trendy. But back then, it was just, like, some baggy jeans, a backwards hat, and sunglasses.
Yeah.
And, like, you're a cool guy.
Yeah, maybe some chocolate starfish, a little drowning pool, perhaps. Because that's all you needed back then to be cool, you know?
Back when My Way was the greatest song of all time. There was no band better than
Limp Bizkit, yes.
Limp Bizkit, yes.
Yes, they were kings of the world at one point.
I'm beginning to think, though, that they were not the actual favorite band of the WWE, considering they haven't been inducted into the Hall of Fame yet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It seems Mr. Kid Rock has swooped in and stolen the crown from Fred Durst and company.
I still resent Kid Rock, because I was at WrestleMania 25. I sat through that concert, and I still have bitter feelings about it.
Well, listen, it's good to have you back on the show. How are things? You know, I know that since the last time you were on the show, you've moved on up in the world, because for years you were just the biggest Impact Wrestling fan in the world, and now, well, you're still that, but now you are actually working for Impact, which is pretty cool.
Now I get paid to send tweets. I get paid to send tweets about them instead of just doing it manically, obsessively in my spare time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you told people the news, I thought, you know, if there's anyone in the world who deserves to run the social media for Impact Wrestling, it's Garrett Kidney, because you've basically been doing it for years on your own Twitter with various GIFs and reviews and so forth. You just weren't getting paid for it. But now here you are doing what you love, and you're making the big bucks. So you are truly blessed here, Garrett. Truly blessed.
I'm living the life. Hopefully people, like, if you think that the Impact Twitter account has gotten a lot worse in the last 2 months, not me at all. No, I'm not doing anything. I'm not. I just hope people like it. People seem to like it, so thanks. Thumbs up. Once I don't suck, that's all. That's all that matters.
That's all you need. Just one day without that tweet. Yeah. Just one day without it. Well, again, it's great to have you back on the show here, Garrett. I love talking wrestling with you so much. It's just so much fun. Now, keep in mind, no Jeff Jarrett discussion this time around, okay? Keep that in mind. But although it's funny, since last summer, Jeff Jarrett has once again been on the brink of doom and somehow, some way, has clawed his way back to victory, because we saw him, he was visibly drunk on screen at Triple Mania. He was ousted from Impact yet again. His reputation was at like an all-time low, pretty much. And then, all of a sudden, out of the fucking blue, he's going into the WWE Hall of Fame. Despite extorting Vince McMahon all those years ago, he wins again, Garrett. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Jeff Jarrett always wins.
It's amazing. My idea for the Hall of Fame ceremony is to have Vince come out on stage and go, we're here tonight to induct Jeff Jarrett into the WWE Hall of Fame. You know how Jeff spells his name? J-E-F-F? Well, after tonight, we're going to spell it a different way around here. B-A-A-C-K. Back. And then, you know, Jeff comes out and they hug.
Or Jeff comes out and hits him like a guitar.
Oh, yes. I told you not to piss me off. Wow. Bow,
now, now. Still salty that's dubbed on the network. Anyway.
Damn you, Vince. Damn you.
it's a ripoff of a Kid Rock song, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Look at that. Look at that. They're all going to be there at the ceremony together. So, you know, get Vince, get Kid Rock, get Jeff. Do like a little power trio meeting with them. It's kismet, Garrett. That's what it is. It's kismet.
Yeah, and then Kid Rock officially says, you may use the ripoff theme. And then he comes out to the wow, and everyone's happy. Everyone is happy.
It's a win-win-win for everyone involved, that's for sure. But we're not here to discuss Jeff Jarrett here. Today is episode 29, and we are here to discuss the theme history of another man who has been a longtime staple of Impact Wrestling on more than one occasion. It's the World Warrior Low Ki. 5-time X Division champion, a 3-time IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, inaugural ROH World Champion, former PWG World Champion, about, like, I don't know, 800 other titles and accolades to his name. The guy has been there, done that 1,000 times over, all around the world. So if you're listening to us, chances are you've seen a low-key match or two over the past, I don't know, 20 years or so. A lot of kicks, a lot of banshee screams, belligerent attitude, bald head, that's low key. Really, one of the pioneers, not just of the X Division, I think, but of the indie wrestling scene that we have today. Low key is one of those guys who helped lay the foundation for modern independent wrestling starting in the early 2000s. You know, he was in that King of the Indies tournament with Brian Danielson and Christopher Daniels back in 2001. He was a staple of Ring of Honor during its early years. He main evented their first show. He was their first champion. His matches, you know, they helped set the tone because of how focused they were on athleticism and realism and grittiness. You believed that Loki's kicks were real. You believed that he wanted to decimate his opponent. You believed that he was an amazing athlete. And we see that today in so many wrestlers who are either still on that indie scene or are now in WWE or Impact or New Japan or wherever, and they've taken that indie style and taken it to those places. So I have no doubt that Low Ki has influenced so many guys who are wrestling today, and he's reached that legend status amongst the American indie wrestling scene for good reasons and bad, admittedly, which we'll get into those, of course. But Garrett, I'll go to you here. I know that when you were first on the show, you brought up that Best of the X Division Volume 2 DVD. Now, was that the first time you ever saw Low Ki? If not, what was? And do you remember if there was a specific moment where you were like, okay, this Low Ki guy is really fucking awesome?
I assume I saw a Low Ki match before that. Probably. Because TNA would have been on the old wrestling channel back in the day. It would have been during the Asylum years. So I assume I would have seen like bits and pieces of Loki through the years. But yeah, I'd imagine that DVD is my first like prolonged exposure to Loki, because Loki was like king of the X Division in 2006. Kind of after Styles Daniels Joe happened, it was then kind of Loki, Chris Sabin, Jay Lethal. It was that kind of era. And weirdly, the thing I think about with Loki is like, this is a cool guy, is the little crane kick he does where he grabs his foot and then kicks someone in the back.
Yeah.
And that's just like, that's a cool thing to do. Look at this guy. He could just kick somebody, but nah, he does a cool thing where he grabs his own foot, then kicks somebody. Then he does a cartwheel into a freaking spinning kick, which I was watching wrestling with a non-wrestling fan. We were watching, it was actually during NXT, during the Caval days, which we'll get to.
Oh, yes.
But we were, and, you know, Loki was doing his Loki thing, and then he did the cartwheel kick, and my friend just burst out laughing because, like, yeah. It is kind of ridiculous that he does a cartwheel into a kick. The cartwheel is entirely superfluous. It's entirely unnecessary. But is it cool? Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And like you mentioned independent wrestling. I don't think the phrase independent pro wrestler applies to anybody more than it does to Loki.
Yeah. Yeah. I was gonna bring that up later on. Yeah, that is a very apt statement for sure.
He is his own man. He is an independent man. Like, you know, if things aren't going so well, he'll just walk. It's yes. Just like, all right, I'll go somewhere else, or I'll just disappear for 6 months, or I'll just do voiceovers. I'll just do the voice of suicide. There's some fun trivia for you. I noticed we don't include the suicide theme song in our list of themes. Is this open for debate now?
Listen, man, all right? Decisions had to be made. So don't judge me here, Garrett. I will kick you off in an instant, okay?
All right. I've already used this appearance on Music of the Mat as leverage to not be kicked out of the Voices of Wrestling Slack this week. I need this. But yeah, Loki, my main impression of Loki is he's cool.
All right. That's it. All right.
That's it. He does kicks, and he does flips into kicks, and then he does more kicks, and then people seem like they're in a great deal of pain from his kicks, and you can't enjoy that. It's wrestling. It's the best.
So when I was growing up, my house had Comcast for a few years, and one of the features of Comcast back then was that on their on-demand service, you could go to the wrestling section of the pay-per-views and watch a free wrestling match every month from WWE or TNA. And I think the first or second TNA match I saw on that service, this was like, I think, late 04, was Ultimate X2, which was Michael Shane versus Chris Sabin versus Christopher Daniels versus Low-Key. So that match was both my first Low-Key match and my first Ultimate X match. And being, you know, a young guy back then who had never seen Ultimate X before, I remember just losing my mind over how innovative and crazy it was. At the time, of course, it was. You know, nowadays I've seen like a million of those things. But back then, Ultimate X was so fresh and wild to me. And seeing Low-Key for the first time as well, I thought that he looked just so cool and unique. The kicks, the speed, the badass demeanor. I remember the moment that hooked me with Low-Key was, at one point, Christopher Daniels had set up a steel chair underneath the belt in the middle of the ring, because Ultimate X, the way it works is that you have these two cables that are crisscrossed above the ring, and at the intersection in the middle, the X Division belt is hanging off of it. And you have to get the belt to win the match, but you can't use a ladder. So what Daniels had done was, he had set up a steel chair underneath the belt so he could jump off it and, you know, and get the belt that way. He takes like a running start and tries to jump off of it, but he can't reach it the first time. He tries to do it again, and as he's running off the ropes towards the chair, you see on the opposite side of the ring, Low-Key run up and do a springboard off the middle rope. So Daniels leaps off the chair, and Low-Key hits him with a roundhouse kick to the stomach in mid-fucking air. It was fucking nuts. I was like, all right, this Low-Key guy is awesome. And then, during the same match, he and Daniels were hanging off the cables, and Low-Key locks in the Dragon Clutch, which is a dragon sleeper with body scissors, while they're hanging off the cables. So Low-Key left a rather big impression on me at an early age, which is now, geez, like over 13 years ago. So Now, Garrett, I know you've seen that match because you've seen everything TNA has ever put out.
It would be remiss, negligent even of me to say that match is available on the Global Wrestling Network. Start your free 30-day trial now. My favorite thing about that match is the fact that Daniels is just like, how can I cheese this? Because before he does the running start, he starts like jumping, you know, just seeing, yes, can he grab it? And then he stands on the chair and tries to jump, can't get it. So he goes for the momentum thing, still can't get it, goes again, and that's when Loki gets him. So there's this big buildup of Daniels just being like, ah. And actually before, I'm pretty sure Michael Shane tries to springboard from the ropes and grab it, and then that also fails. I'm not sure, is that match or the first one? I can't remember.
I don't know.
But I do love that it's just like, especially because the match was relatively new then. It was only the second one. And in the first match, the belt fell like three times. So Chris Sabin had to hang there for a good 30 seconds at the end trying to pull it because they duct taped it to the freaking cable so it wouldn't fall. Which is a great thing about that match. You see Chris Sabin, he's tugging and tugging for a good 10 seconds to get that belt down. And he takes the hardest looking bump. It looked like it sucked. But yeah, Loki is the best. And that was that into 2004? It was the start of 2004, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. That match is just a ton of fun. So much fun. And really, with a guy like Low Ki, you know, there are plenty of his matches that are tons of fun because he's a great wrestler. And not just in Impact, either. You know, Low Ki is like that Johnny Cash song. He's been everywhere. Every promotion you can think of, pretty much, that's been around, like, past 2001... Low Ki has wrestled there. You know, WWE, TNA, ROH, PWG, New Japan, All Japan, NOAH, AAA, CZW, DGUSA, Evolve, Zero One, AAW, AIW, even Hustle. He's been to Hustle. So Low Ki has been like around the world and back. And I think why Low Ki has become such an iconic figure in indie wrestling is because, you know, like you said, Garrett, you know, he puts the independent, an independent wrestler. He doesn't have any blood ties to a promotion. He doesn't feel that overriding sense of loyalty to any company. He follows his own path and his own emotions. He is an independent spirit through and through. Oftentimes, to the detriment of his own career and to the chagrin of many promoters and bookers alike, but that's who he is. If he doesn't like the way things are going with his own booking, if he wants to do something else and the promoters won't let him, if he just pissed someone off or is pissed off himself, he'll just leave. He'll be gone. And it doesn't matter that he's on WWE TV every week. It doesn't matter that he just wrestled in the Tokyo Dome. It doesn't matter that he's in a hot stable like LAX. He'll just go. You know, he's not the kind of guy who swallows his pride easily or goes along to get along. He does what he feels is right by him. And I know he's not the first guy to do this, of course. I mean, there are plenty of guys in wrestling that have put their own pride and their own interests above the smarter career choice. You know, look at Cody Rhodes is a great example right now. Look at Austin Aries. Look at Neville. But I think the fact that Low Ki has been this way for so long and has done it on multiple occasions with different promotions that he's become something of a legend in indie wrestling.
Rightfully so. Like, as you said, people kind of vilify him for it at times. You know, he's uncooperative and hard to work with, which is probably a little true. But hey, he backs himself. He is who he is. Doesn't take crap. All power to him. You could argue wrestling probably needs a small bit more of that in 2018.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Low Ki is a good guy. You know, he can be a prick on many occasions. You know, he's knocked out guys in the ring. He's broken noses. He's thrown temper tantrums. He's not the friendliest fry in the Happy Meal, that's for sure. But I think that people like Low Ki, who are deeply independent, can be like that. They can be really standoffish. So that's who Low Ki is, you know?
He's not the good guy, he's not the bad guy, he's the guy.
Yeah, there you go. A little reference there for you, yeah.
References.
Yeah. All right, Garrett, are you ready to delve into the world of Low Ki themes?
Oh, I was born ready.
Okay. We are going to start now with the song that he's used the most throughout his career, all throughout the Independence and ROH and Japan and many, many places. Off of Mortal Kombat, the album, this is The Immortals with Born in China. So there are a few recurring motifs with Loki's theme history. The first one we see here with Born in China, and that is Loki having East Asian sounding music, despite not actually being Asian. He's actually Puerto Rican and Italian. But having said that, though, I do think that there are aspects about Loki that you can look at as originating from East Asian culture. The martial arts moveset, the stoic warrior monk persona, the high-pitched Bruce Lee-like screams. Even the name Loki can sound like it's Asian in origin. So if you look at how Loki is presented, and how he acts, and how he wrestles even, it makes sense for him to use this type of song. Look at Muhammad Yone in Noah, who uses Boogie Wonderland by Earth, Wind & Fire. Yone is like the furthest thing from African-American, sure, but he's got the afro and the dance moves and the funky spirit, so it makes sense to have Boogie Wonderland as his entrance theme. And, too, I mean, it's not like Loki was forced to use this theme. You know, he's been using this song for 20 years, so he himself likely has a deep love and respect for East Asian culture, and he wants to use it in his wrestling career. In multiple ways.
And I'm trying to figure out how to say this in a way that doesn't sound racist. when you look at Loki, he's hard to nail down ethnically. I think that's actually anti-racist. I can't see race in Loki, that's what I'm saying. But you know, you look at Loki and he has that East Asian vibe to him. As you said, he's Puerto Rican and Italian. But if you took a survey and said what ethnicity is Loki, most people would probably say he's Asian of some sort. Is that racist, Andrew? I feel like I'm being a little racist.
I don't think so. I think your heart's in the right place there, Garrett.
Yeah. So he does, as you said, he leans into that feel, that East Asian kind of feel, and a lot of his themes, especially his TNA themes, very much follow that motif.
Yeah, we'll see it again over and over for sure. But I think this song is also a great fit for Loki when you look at where the song comes from. The song is for the character of Liu Kang for Mortal Kombat. You know, born in China, Liu Kang. And like Loki, Liu Kang is also a martial arts expert. You hear audio samples of him from the game in the music, you know, grunting and hitting moves. There's also an intensity here with this song. And Loki is quite an intense individual, for sure. But there's also like a really beautiful, entrancing melody to it. The song begins with that lovely keyboard intro and tone, that boom, 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 that repeats throughout the song, underneath the powerful techno. And watching Loki, there's a beauty to seeing him move around the ring, doing cartwheels and combat rolls in between the sharp kicks and strikes and submission moves. So like Loki, I think Born in China strikes, no pun intended, a balance between intense action and this lovely flowing undercurrent.
I actually didn't know, this is a testament to Mortal Kombat music, by the way. I didn't know it was a song from Mortal Kombat, and I just wrote down in my notes, Mortal Kombat vibe. It's like, yes, because it's a song from Mortal Kombat. I nailed it. I've clearly done extensive research. I'm clearly very on top of things.
On the nose, Garrett. On the nose.
Do you think this fits Loki?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
I think it's too peppy.
So here's what I think. I think that Loki is supposed to be like this modern day Shaolin monk warrior, and having the techno and electro bits mixed in with the East Asian genre represents that modernity. So that's how I see it anyway.
Yeah, but I see Loki as like stoic and angry and not I suppose it like it fits his wrestling style, because obviously his style is very explosive and dynamic, and and it kind of works for that, as you said, the kind of a techno, it's very techno-y, but I don't know, it's not intense enough. I want more intensity there.
We'll get intensity, Garrett, don't worry.
All right, just gonna
we'll go now to TNA. Loki has spent many years in TNA. Not in a row, but many years in TNA.
What's he on? He's on like run number 5, whatever. That was his most recent
one. He just finished number 4, I think.
It's hard to nail down, because there's times where he left because he's like on tours of Japan and came back. Does that count as leaving and just kind of coming back? It's at least 4.
I think it's any time he's left and come back after like a long period of time. So we'll say 4. We'll say 4 to be safe. His first singles theme in TNA is, of course, by the one and only Dale Oliver. This is called Omari. Again, we have Loki using a very East Asian-sounding song here as his entrance theme. More so than Born in China, I think, because unlike Born in China, Omari doesn't have that techno injection to make it feel all lively and modern. It feels very traditional, you know? It feels very traditional Japanese, obviously because it's using a lot of those traditional instruments. Very stereotypical, sounds kind of like stock Japanese music from some production company, but it also lacks urgency. It lacks that intensity. It lacks that spark that Born in China has, which makes that a fun song. And really, it just doesn't feel like a good Loki song to me. You know, it doesn't feel like a good fit for him. It feels like more of a generic, hey, this guy does martial arts, or hey, this guy is from Japan, rather than a theme that represents Loki and his character, and fits that well. Which I suppose is why Dale Oliver would use this song again for different wrestlers like Team Japan in the World X Cup, or No Limit, which was Naito and Yujiro's old tag team, or even Okada when he was in TNA for a little bit. So I think, you know, Dale using this song for different Japanese wrestlers, it backs up my feelings about this song.
I wonder, because we didn't use it for Team Japan in the 2008 World X Cup, and didn't use it for like Sanada and Great Muta. They had their own themes. So I wonder, like, what's the call made? It's like, roll out the freaking Japanese stock track and let's work on this. Let's actually do a theme. I wonder what that conversation is. I think it's true of a lot of early TNA themes, that they just kind of don't lack urgency, do they? They don't have that oomph moment that you want out of most theme songs. It's just kind of like passive, born and raised. It's the ultimate TNA theme song. But yeah, and like obviously this was in the day, like early first 6 months of TNA, where they had about 10 theme songs they spread across the whole roster and didn't really think very hard about them. Like My World came up, and I Am came up, and AMW got their own theme eventually.
Yeah.
So, but it's just like, maybe they composed this theme with the intent of reusing it, so that it's just like, we need something that can fit Loki, kind of, but also maybe fit some other people down the line. Because what Monty Brown's theme was reused for Abyss, and that theme just does not fit Monty Brown.
No, no, no.
He's like, the name of the song is Down in the Catacombs, and then it's just like, oh yeah, that fits Monty. He's an American football player? Yeah, sure.
Yes. Yeah. Hunting in the Serengeti, in the catacombs, because that's where the Serengeti is. You know, right, Garrett?
That's,
you know,
that's
not in Africa. The catacombs of wherever.
That's how Africa works. Who needs maps?
Yeah. Do you think that Dale Oliver called this song Omari because he's just a huge fan of Takao Omari.
Well, like, Takao Omori showed up in TNA like after 10 weeks.
Really?
He wrestled Ken Shamrock for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
Well, how about that? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So maybe he's just like, oh, Takao. Oh, yeah, that's exactly it. He wrote this theme song for Takao Omori and then used it for Loki. That is my conspiracy theory.
See, I think that Dale was watching the 96 Royal Rumble match and he saw Omori come out and was like, I like this guy, this Omori kid. He's got a bright future ahead of him. You know, maybe one day I will write a song for Omori and it'll be the most stereotypical Japanese song ever. And I'll put his name on it, too.
And then give it to Loki. For reasons we'll never understand, and remix it. I'm very mad that we have a giant database of theme songs on a Dropbox, and we don't have this.
Yeah, I know. The quality stinks. It's off of YouTube, folks. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I tried.
I'm sure it's somewhere. It's somewhere in Dale Oliver's vault. Somewhere.
I love the idea that Dale Oliver sits there every night just like, gonna break out some old school tracks and just listen to them in front of the fireplace with a glass of wine.
That's what I would do, to be honest. That's what I would do.
In fairness, he's written some absolutely wonderful songs. Yes. So he deserves it.
Absolutely. So during his first two runs in TNA, Loki was also part of a stable called Triple X, along with the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels, and Primetime Elix Skipper. You can find this song on NWA TNA The Music Volume 2. Once again, this is Dia Oliver with Triple X Gonna Give It. Another recurring motif in Loki's theme history is that he has used a few stable themes throughout his career. Because I think that, you know, a lot of people's perceptions about Loki is that he's this, you know, mystic vagabond warrior who roams the wrestling landscape on his own. No friends, only himself. But really, he's been in quite a few stables as well. Triple X, the Rottweilers, LAX, the Beatdown Clan, which we mentioned on the Samoa Joe episode, Great Bash Heel, and Chaos in New Japan. So he's been on both sides of the spectrum when it comes to being the solo warrior and the stablemate, Garrett.
Even Triple X was a sub-stable of Sports Entertainment Extreme on stage. So he was
in
sex
right.
as well.
Yeah. Another theme I did not put on the list because I just can't deal with the SEX theme right now, Garrett. I don't have the patience for it, honestly.
I was watching an old TNA pay-per-view, and there was a Glenn Gilberti against Jorge Estrada? Yeah, Glenn Gilberti-Jorge Estrada match. And they had, I think it was Mike Sanders on commentary. And Mike TNA said the line, Glenn Gilberti, head of talent development at SEX. It's just like, poor Mike TNA having to say words like
poor
that.
Poor Mike TNA.
I want to say, Dale Oliver has been given an unfounded reputation of making themes that kind of sound like other songs. And frankly, I don't hear it with this song. This is an entirely original song.
Me neither. I am at a total loss for what this could sound like.
Even like the song is called Triple X Gonna Give It To You, or Gonna Give It. That's entirely coincidental. In fact, maybe he wrote this first. How can you prove he didn't?
Yeah, you don't know. Dale could have written this in like 94 or something.
When he was in 1996, when he was writing
Omari.
I was watching a documentary on Chrono Trigger, and when Yasunori Masuda was given the job to compose for that game, he wrote the main theme for Chrono Trigger in one sitting. He was like so inspired and fired up that he's going to get the composer of this game. This song is Dale Oliver's equivalent, you know? It's just when he's like, I'm going to write wrestling themes, this is what came out. And obviously DMX ripped him off.
Of course, yes. But This song is also evidence of another motif, and that is low-key having like a hip-hop street gangsta theme. Not that I would describe Triple X as being gangsters, but certainly this theme and the Rottweilers theme and the Beatdown Clan and LAX as well, they all share that common genre. Because, come on, folks, this song is a pretty blatant ripoff of X Gon' Give It To Ya by DMX.
Blasphemy. Now,
sorry. Now, that song is quite gangsta, and it also uses trumpets in it for the main melody. But here, though, there is just like a cavalcade of trumpets. So many trumpets, so little time, but it's also got like a nice funky bass line and some processed gangsta vocals, you know, X, gonna give it to you, ba-na-na, ba-na-na. And overall, I think a song like this that is so gung-ho and bouncy and lively works for Triple X because they are three X Division wrestlers. Their matches are also quite hot-paced and exciting and lively as well.
As Chris Daniels, Loki, and Eli Skipper are relatively different characters, so you kind of get, like, if you're trying to get something that fits all three of them, you're just going to be like, oh, this is just going to be a mess of a theme song. Let's get something that kind of vaguely works for all of them. Did you, like, when do you think of Triple X? Do you think of Triple X as a trio?
Honestly, no. No, I tend to think of just the
Skipper
tag
and Daniels tag team.
Of Daniels,
yeah.
And Skipper. Yeah, because that was when I first started watching TNA. At that point, Low-Key was gone, and Skipper and Daniels were in that feud with AMW. So I don't think of Low-Key as being Triple X. Well, in a sense, I do. But initially, I'll say I think of the duo of Daniels and Skipper first.
And they didn't do a ton of work as a trio. Like, they had their most famous trios matches against the SATs, which is the match where Don West stood up on the table chanting "Go Red Go" in what is probably one of the greatest match moments in TNA history.
Well, he was a fan of him, you know? He was his manager later on, so...
That's the kind of long-term storytelling you get from Impact Wrestling, my friend.
Now, when Triple X reunited in 2007, they used a remix version of Triple X Gonna Give It, so let's hear what that sounds like. Describe this as like a darker version of the song, if that even makes sense, if that's the right word, because it's essentially the same song. They've cleaned up the sound quality a little bit, still like a shitload of trumpets coming out the wazoo. The notable difference here is that they've added like this snarly, grimy guitar to the mix, so the song is a little less funky and a bit darker, which, if you look back on that second run of Triple X, it was kind of a darker version of the group, because that was when Daniels grew out the beard and put face paint around his eye and started muttering to himself and looking up to the heavens and basically went a bit nutso. So this reunited Triple X, having like a somewhat darker song, it works for that era of the group, I think.
It reflects the growth and maturity of Triple X. So the edgier vibe when they're feuding with Team Pac-Man, and that 2007 Triple X one is just kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, they didn't really do much, because they reunited at Victory Road 07, wrestled together for a few months, and they just broke up again after that.
Pretty much. That's their 2007 arc. I love the way that they explained around, because obviously...
Oh.
Daniels and Skipper lost the tag match to AMW, which means they could never team again.
I remember this.
But they're like,
yeah, this is great.
Because Skipper
this.
Was released and re-signed, that means the clause in the contract that said they could no longer team had expired, and thus they could team again.
Genius. Pure.
That's just nonsense.
Pure genius.
I prefer the original Triple X theme. I like the funkier vibe.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun, I'd say. Better memories, for sure. Hmm. So, Low-Ki's first TNA run ended in 2004. He was still in Ring of Honor at the time, however. And while he was in Ring of Honor, he joined another stable, the Rottweilers, with Homicide, Ricky Reyes, Rocky Romero, and Julius Smokes as their manager. And while he was in that stable, he used the Rottweilers' theme. This is off of Tupac Resurrection. It's an instrumental version of The Realist Killers by Tupac, featuring 50 Cent. Another stable theme here, Garrett, and another hip-hop gangsta theme mm-hmm. as well. Notice, though, how it starts off with Born in China, then bang, a gunshot transitions it into The Realist Killers, which I think is a cool audio trick to say that, yes, this is still Low-Ki, this is still the same wrestler as before, with the same hard-hitting style. There's no change there, but he's not the Lonesome Warrior guy here. He's a member of the Rottweilers, and he's going to go into battle representing the Rottweilers.
You see, this is... I was giving out about Born in China not having the intense, gritty feel. This has the... Like, this has all... It goes all in on intense and gritty, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot less going on here than Triple X is going to give it. Clearly not as funky or energetic as that song, but this song isn't about being funky or energetic or taking the X Division by storm like Triple X was. This song is about menace and danger and intimidation. You've got Homicide, Low-Ki, the Havana Pitbulls, all in a group who are all very good at conveying those sentiments. You need a song that will get all that across as well. And this song does that, I think, with the simplest of techniques. That steady percussion beat, that boom, boom, cha, boom, cha, boom, boom, cha, boom, cha. The haunting theremin-like melody. Some light, dramatic keyboard strings that... And also a random gunshot in there as well. So that's all you need to say that Low-Ki and these guys are foreboding. They're dangerous. They're gangsters. Fuck. And they don't need fancy schmancy production techniques to come off like badasses, because they are badasses.
The song is also called The Realist Killers, and in my head, yeah, that means like they're killers who are real, you know, they're straightforward and upfront and, you know, that kind of real. In my head, I read that as The Realist Killers, who are like realistic about the degree to which they kill, you know? They only do it when necessary. They don't have remorse or anything because like they're just doing business. You know, they're just not thoughtful about it, or more thoughtful about it. I'm not sure.
I'd say more thoughtful because yeah, they plan it out. You know, they're not all willy nilly like so many killers are. They know what to do. Mm. They're real about it.
And as I said, anger, grime, and technically gunshots are foreshadowing for the LAX theme. So it's. Long-term storytelling.
Yeah. Genius long-term booking.
Between two different companies. Actually, no, Homicide used the LAX theme in Ring of Honor, didn't he?
So, oh, yeah, yeah. LAX were in Ring of Honor as well for a few shows. So yeah. Homicide used it for both singles and tag team in ROH. So there you go. So Low-Ki comes back to TNA in 2006 under a new name. Because from what I understand here, I think TNA wanted to trademark the name Low-Ki. He wouldn't let them, so they compromised. And he got a new name, Senshi, which is Japanese for warrior. So his new TNA theme by Dale Oliver is just called Warrior. Warrior. know about you, Garrett, but to me, this is the low-key theme.
Yes, yes. I'm nodding furiously.
When I think of low-key, I think of this song, because even though it does use a lot of the same elements as Omari, those traditional East Asian elements, it doesn't come off to me as generic or lacking intensity. It does the opposite, actually. This song does a good job of recognizing Loki's background and influences in the martial arts world, while also generating this aura of intensity and intimidation that Omari doesn't do. And in that way, Garrett, you have a theme here that can stand on its own as a low-key theme.
It's the low-key. It's not even a low-key theme. It's the low-key theme. Like, I was really mad because we were talking about the Beatdown Clan. When he was in the Beatdown Clan, he used the Beatdown Clan theme when he was coming out for singles matches instead of this. And I was legitimately angry because this theme is so good. As you said, it's just more specific than the Team Japan theme, the Omori theme. It's just more like there's distinct movements in the song. It conveys the intensity of Loki. You know, the intro is memorable and it's distinct. It's not just some generic percussion instrument to symbolize Japanese smashy things. What are those called? Clearly I know my musical instruments, but it's just the intensity and the determination. It's just low-key. It's low-key all over. It's the perfect theme song for him.
Yeah, like Born in China, it's all about the components of the song. You have those traditional East Asian musical aspects to it, with the main melody that... and the... which do sound cool and badass and exotic in their own way, but there's also that heavy guitar in the mix, you know, that and the snappy drums as well in the background, which just adds this, like, edge of danger and this extra level of intense fighting spirit to the song. So, again, it's not, oh, hey, look, here's the novelty of a Japanese wrestler appearing in America. It's, here's a guy who is dangerous, he's skilled in martial arts, he's a badass, so don't fuck with him, because he'll fuck you up. And it's a song that I think is timeless, too, because of how well it fits low-key, and how clean the production sound is. So it doesn't matter if it's Senshi in 2006, or low-key in 2011, with the dual-colored spiky tights, or low-key in 2014 with the full bodysuit, or low-key in 2017 with the Hitman outfit. This song works for low-key in any era, Garrett.
And I'm just mad. Anytime he leaves means he doesn't use this theme song anymore. And the world is just slightly worse off for it, isn't it? Yeah, I really like... as I said, I took notes. I wrote one word. It's just best in all caps. that's my entire. It just fits him. It just fits him so well. And you know, as much as the Omori theme didn't, and as much as I had problems with Born in China not really just being a low-key theme, this is the deficient. Like, if you were to define low-key with music, which is in theory what entrance themes are supposed to do, this does it.
Yeah, and when it was first used during the Senshi run, it was really cool to see the purpose and aura of the theme match what was happening in the ring. Because if you go back and watch that prime Senshi run from like mid to late 06, he really was booked like this unstoppable, dangerous man. TNA really pushed him and his Warrior's Way double stomp as like this really like unbeatable combo in the X Division. They gave him the belt and had him beat Sanjay Dutt and Petey Williams and Jay Lethal before he lost to Chris Sabin at Bound for Glory. So it was not like the Omari run, where you had this intense Killer Instinct wrestler wrestling these intense matches, but he's coming out to like Japan Sounds number 7. Senshi and Warrior were a total match for each other from the get-go.
And even the way he comes out to the music... the way he takes like these distinct crisp steps that almost seem in time, and then he does the low stoop, and he you know, he moves from left to right in very distinct movements. It fits, like, he matches the theme himself, and I think about when I think about the theme, for some reason my mind goes back to like Destination X 2011. If I were to think this theme, that's where my mind goes for some reason. And I just think of the way he came out like that, and Christy Hemme messes up the entrance music because she doesn't know where he's from. But just the way he moves with the music is really neat.
Yeah, it's the total package. You know, when you think of the total package of Low Key, it's this song. It's that entrance, that vibe, and that way about him. You know, that warrior's way about him, Garrett.
I see what you did there.
See what I did there?
This is good. Very good. This is very good. If I weren't like 4,000 miles away from you, I'd pat you on the back.
Oh, come on, stop it.
And if I didn't want to deafen the lovely audio listeners, I'd pat the microphone.
So in early 2009, Low Key signs with the WWE and goes to FCW, their developmental territory at the time. His new name is originally Kowal, which is Tagalog for soldier. But then they changed it to Kaval with a V. So, warrior, soldier, there's a pattern here, Garrett.
He's a man who likes to hurt people for fun.
Yes, his name is Kaval, and he loves to fight. Oh, wait, that's a different guy. That's a different guy.
That should have been his theme. That would have worked.
Yeah, from Ireland, Kaval.
I think, as I said, his ethnicity is hard to nail down. He could be Irish. Who knows?
Well, there you go. He could be. His theme is by Wesley Design. This is Street Fighter. Not much to say about this one. For me, it's very generic and also very different too than what we're used to with Low Key. It's not Mystic Asia or gangsta hip hop or techno. This is sludgy nu metal. Again, not much to it. I will say that there is one section, I think it's the turnaround, where it sounds like Sanity's theme, that, but that's about it.
Do you think calling it Street Fighter is a reference to his first theme song being a Mortal Kombat theme?
I noticed that, yes. Yes, it's very funny how he's had one fighting game associated with him throughout his career, and now here's another.
Who makes Mortal Kombat? Is it Konami? I don't even know.
I don't know.
It's Capcom makes Street Fighter, but I don't know who makes Mortal Kombat. Anyway, the first like 3 or 4 seconds for some reason remind me of a Taz theme. I'm not sure is it his TNA theme or is the WWE theme or the Beat Me If You Can theme. And then the rest of it makes me, if you cast your mind back to old wrestling video games, and when I mean old, I mean like 2000, you know, SmackDown and SmackDown 2. This theme song feels like the backing theme that they play like in pre-voice acting video games to heighten the tension and drama. You know, if you're playing SmackDown 2 and Dean Malenko attacks Scotty Too Hotty backstage and Michael Cole does that shrug thing he does in that game a lot, this is the music that plays over that to make like this is important and serious and a thing that's happening. Otherwise, I have no other thoughts about this theme music.
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to sound like a song for a tough guy, which, fair enough, it is that aggressive metal sound, but there's, again, really nothing unique about it. Nothing that says Low Key. It doesn't do anything different than the countless other metal instrumentals out there.
Yeah, this could be anybody's theme song. As you said, there's Sanity vibes and there could be a Sanity theme song. It could be a Richie Steamboat theme song, as I think back to that era of FCW, or Leo Kruger, or all those people who were in FCW forever.
Lucky Cannon.
Yeah, or Abe Washington. Could be an Abe Washington
theme.
Oh,
yeah, theme. AEW. Yeah, yeah.
Byron Saxton, he was there.
Oh, by the way, Mortal Kombat was done by Midway.
Oh, yes.
Who also did the TNA video game.
That's all coming together, isn't it?
Oh, look at this. Long-term booking once again.
There is a weird, weird series of connections to Loki's theme songs. Yeah, that's the reason, because Midway are gone now, obviously. So that's the reason I don't think, who makes the... Who does make it? It's the same people that make the Injustice games these days, I think. I can't remember the name of the development team. Anyway.
It is currently run by, let me look it up here, Interactive Entertainment, which is Warner Brothers. So there you go.
Yep. So it's the same people as Injustice. Yep.
Caval debuts on WWE TV during NXT Season 2, back when it was still a competition show. He wins it, beating Alex Riley in the finals, and he goes to SmackDown. His new theme, done by Daniel Holter and Kyle White, it's called Exploding Helmets. This is another one that takes kind of a left turn from what we're used to with Low Key. It's less metal, more like hard rock mixed in with like this brass arrangement. Again, a bit generic, if I'm being honest here. Although, it does remind me of like watching an NFL game and they fade in from commercial break with like this swooping shot across the field. The music that they play coming back from the break, it's that
you know, I know exactly what you mean. I was trying to nail down
it's that sort of grandiose brass heavy music. Obviously this song is like more rock oriented, but they do share DNA. I think even the title Exploding Helmets, can't you just like picture like two CGI football helmets like appearing on screen? The announcer goes, it's a big game today. It's the Oregon Schmageckis versus the New Mexico Hamantaschen. And then the helmets, they collide. Exactly. Then the helmets, they collide together in this big explosion. So, now, Garrett, you are clearly a red, white, and blue, full-blooded American man. So you totally get what I'm saying here, right?
Yeah, sports. Why is it called football when they use their hands most of the time?
Hey, why is it called soccer when they wear shoes?
That's true. I never thought about that. God, you've gotten me. I'm going to petition that we wear socks. When I was looking at the title, when I thought Exploding Helmets, I'm like, how does that relate to Loki? And I was like, I guess he kicks people's heads off. So if people wore helmets and he kicked the helmet would explode. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
I was trying to nail down that field. You're exactly right. It's that coming back from break at a sports event theme song. I was thinking it reminded me of some 2005 TNA pay-per-view themes. That when you think of those themes, you think about the intro and they're running the title graphics. So that's where my mind went. But it's the exact same thing. Yeah, it doesn't feel like an entrance theme. It just feels like we're coming back from break. Hi guys.
Yeah, this is very much like incidental music for some sports show or whatever. It's a fine song, no harsh criticisms about it, but again, it could go with anyone.
Yep. And, oh, do we technically, I wonder, do you ever come out to it? Can we include Lay Cool?
You know, it's on his Wikipedia page, but again, Garrett, decisions had to be made.
You kicked Lay Cool, you're not enough for me. Woo!
We'll save it for the Divas episode. All right.
Fair enough. The Michelle McCool retrospective, which is one song. Welcome to Music of the Mat, where we talk about one song.
Exactly. Yep. You know, I think Low Key having such unmemorable and nothing songs during his run as Caval speaks to how nothing that Caval run was itself. I mean, he was in FCW for a little over a year, wins NXT Season 2, which was really his only accomplishment there, wrestled a bunch of matches on SmackDown, lost most of them, lost Dolph Ziggler at Survivor Series 2010, and then he was gone because he didn't like his direction in WWE. So he just left.
I think the highlight of that whole run was that time he kicked Dolph Ziggler very hard in the face.
Also when he name-dropped TNA in that rap he did on NXT.
All you gotta need is some total nonstop action. Yeah. No wonder he didn't last.
You know, Garrett, it's a shame that Low Key didn't keep the name Koal with the W, because then, if he ever ran into Hulk Hogan, Hogan could shout, "That's Koal, brother!" I'm sorry, Garrett, I'm sorry. I had to get that in there. I'm sorry.
These are the reasons you are a national treasure, sir.
Oh, stop.
The highlight of the Voices of Wrestling Slack is when Andrew Rich suddenly pops up with a wonderfully terrible dad joke and everybody's life is made better.
Listen, that's what I bring to the table, all right? No hot takes, no big scoops, just dad jokes and nothing else.
It's all you need in Slack.
Exactly, yes. So it is time now for the last theme of the episode. Low Key returns to TNA for the, is it the fourth return? Fifth overall run?
We're going to count. There's the first one.
The original run. That's one.
Yeah.
The Senshi run in 06. That's two.
Mm-hmm.
The 2011 return. That's three. The 2014 return. That's four.
Four, yeah.
And this most recent one, which is the fifth.
Yep.
So he's been in TNA five times overall. In 2017, Low Key joins another stable, LAX, the Latin American Exchange, with Conan, Homicide, Ortiz, Santana, and Diamante. He's only in it for a whopping 20 days.
Yep.
Of course, that's in real time. TV time, he was in it for a bit longer, but 20 days in total for Low Key and LAX. This song is by Dale Oliver, Serge Salinas, and Conan off the album Green, The Music of Impact Wrestling. It's just called LAX.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino pride, the ambassadors of violence. LAX, Chaos, the notorious 187 Homicide.
Here we have Low Key really digging into his Latino roots for like the first time, I think, ever in his theme history. Now, this is technically a mashup theme because it's a combination of the first LAX theme, Dogs, by Conan, which is the intro, you know, Orgullosamente Latino, hasta la muerte después, etc., etc., and the second LAX theme, To Live and Die in LAX, by Dale Oliver and Serge Salinas, which is the rest of the song, you know, El tiempo es ahora, the time is now, etc., etc. I guess I can see why they did it. They probably wanted to keep using To Live and Die in LAX, but also wanted to acknowledge that first incarnation of the group with Conan. But in that case, why not go back to just using Dogs? But I don't know. But the message is pretty clear. It's pretty obvious that it's about, you know, Latino pride, rising up, revolutions, that whole affair, which goes right along with who LAX are and what they stand for.
They also added for this theme the helicopter intro, which I'm not sure does that technically count as part of the theme song, but it is part of their entrance, you know, where they do the cameras panning around and the jump cuts. Yes. And the kind of like the like a helicopter car chase kind of vibe, I think is what they're going for. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, we talked about Loki heavily leaning into East Asian culture as opposed to, like, his own Italian and Puerto Rican background. And finally, toward the end of his career, it's like, here's the Hispanic influence in Loki. Finally, we get there.
Yeah, yeah, at the very end.
Are you saying Loki doesn't have 20 more years and 4 more theme songs in him, Andrew?
Listen, I'm doubtful, okay? I'm doubtful. I know he's going to wrestle Matt Riddle at Bloodsport in a few weeks, but I'm a little doubtful, to be honest with you.
I'd say there's at least at least two more TNA runs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he is. He has a good like 8 months of TNA left in him for sure.
Yeah, there's Death, Taxes, and Loki coming and going from TNA are the surefire, and Jeff Jarrett wins in the end. There's four yes. surefire things in life.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Loki has like 8 months of TNA left in him, which I'm sure he'll spread out over the course of like 7 years or so. But here's the thing: whenever I hear this song or any LEX theme, I turn into the nerdy white kid from that Nation of Domination gif where he raises his fist in the air.
Yeah.
That's me. I love LEX and their themes so much. So even though normally I am the hokey, dad joke telling, nerdy white guy, every time I hear an LEX theme, I essentially turn into Che Guevara. And then the song ends, and then I'm back to being just plain old me. But for those 3.5 minutes, I am all about La Revolución. I just love these songs so much.
I think this is, if you were to make a list of like the most iconic TNA Impact themes, this definitely makes that list. It suits LAX's vibe. You know, they're a street gang. The entire Impact Tag Division is built around drugs these days. And they're a street gang selling their product on the streets in Tijuana or whatever. And this music fits that vibe. It fits that theme. It fit Homicide and Hernandez as these kind of rugged, tough, you know, in-your-face...
Militant.
Yeah, militant's a great word. And like Santana Ortiz are the perfect people to carry that forward. Like Santana's the kind of heavyweight, Santana's the cruiserweight, Ortiz is the heavyweight, even though I think technically Santana is taller. But still, I'm big fans of Santana and Ortiz. They're great. They're yes. one of the more underrated teams going right now. And yeah, Loki, was he a fit with LAX? Probably debatable. But this is a good theme song, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, it bridges the gap between the old LAX with Conan, who were militant and strongly anti-America, tried to burn the American flag on national TV once.
Until American hero Petey Williams stopped it.
Petey Williams, that all-American-American, Petey Williams saving the day. And it bridges that LAX with the new LAX, which is about LAX, the group, trying to get ahead and push their brand, I suppose.
Selling their drugs in Tijuana. That's not even a joke, by the way. If people are wondering, like, the LAX OBE feud was based around like drug smuggling, and like the tag titles apparently determine how much you can sell your drugs for, which that's my kind of wrestling story.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently
Sammy Callahan going up to Conan, stay out of my territory.
Yeah, then throws a fireball in his face. That's a thing that actually happened.
Sammy Walter White Callahan.
Yeah, there's Jeremiah Crane, there's Sammy Callahan, and then there's Sammy Walter White Callahan.
You know, I always thought it was funny seeing all the other members of LAX dressing like LAX typically dress, with the bandanas and the t-shirts and the baggy pants and such. And there's Low Key, dressed like Agent 47. But again, that's Low Key. He does what he wants,
yep.
Even when it's like fashionably contrasting. So
he's not one to think about fashion. He just wants to kick people in the face. That's all he wants.
All right, that was our look at the theme history of Low Key, a very enigmatic wrestler, a lot of great themes under his belt, and he's still wrestling today. Again, like I said, he's going to wrestle Matt Riddle at Matt Riddle's Bloodsport on Mania Weekend. And who knows, Garrett, who knows? Maybe we'll see Low Key walk through the hallowed halls of the Impact Zone once again.
Could be any day now. Could be any moment. He could, like, that's the best thing about Loki, though. Like, he could show up in NXT in the morning and people would, like, they'd be shocked, but it's like, yeah, he won't last there, but it's cool.
Well, Garrett, this was so much fun. As always, I love talking to you about wrestling, and I know that you do too, because, I'm still in your life, and you haven't gotten rid of me yet there, Garrett.
Well, I blocked your Skype number, didn't I? Oh, hi, Andrew.
Oh, what was that? You broke up there for a second.
Oh, sorry. Internet connections. They're so bad.
So, please go ahead and plug your wares here, Garrett. What do you have going on? The floor is yours.
You can follow me personally on Twitter at Garrett Kidney, GAORRETTKIDNEY. I spell my name because it has two R's and two T's and it's weird. You can follow my follow Impact. I tweet on it. I do all that stuff, socials. Global Wrestling Network, if you want to watch all the matches associated with the TNA theme songs we talked about, the vast majority of them are there at globalwrestlingnetwork.com. That's a cheap plug, but please, it's doing pretty well lately, and it's a good service, lots of matches, please use it. Thank you, bye. Thank you. What else is there? Impact on Pop on Thursdays at 8, there you go. See, I'm corporate now, I have to do corporate
yeah
plugs.
Yeah, corporate kidney. There was corporate Kane, and now there's corporate kidney.
Yeah, I just walk around in a suit, and even though I work from home, I put the suit on for my one foot commute from my bed to my desk. Am I out of plugs? Oh yeah, we're probably launching a podcast around TNA history soon-ish. So look out for that.
Think I could get in on that by any chance?
In fairness, I'd love to do a TNA theme song episode with you, so yes, you're cordially invited.
All right. Music of the Mat is part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, home to a bevy of great podcasts like the VOW Flagship, Wrestling Omakase, Burning Spirits, Five Star Match Game, Sarah and Sarah, Brit Rez Roundtable, WrestleNomics, and plenty more. Find them all at voicesofwrestling.com. Follow the show on Twitter at Music of the Mat. Follow me on Twitter at Andrew T. Rich. Check out the VOW forums at voicesofwrestling.com/forum. That's where you'll find the YouTube playlists for each episode. Give us a nice rating and review on iTunes or Google Play. Hit that subscribe button there as well. And, in general, tell your friends about the show. Garrett, again, this was wonderful. You're an absolute delight. Best of luck with your new venture, and I'll definitely have you back on the show again.
It's an absolute pleasure.
All right. So for Garrett Kidney, I'm Andrew Rich, and I'll see you next time on Music of the Mat. Take care, guys.
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.